ideally, you consume the news, then you go and read our opinion, a columnist's opinion, and then you add your own opinion. And that's how a conversation within the community starts, to find a solution to a problem or to just call something out, either for praise or for condemnation. And that's where, yeah, that's where the opinion page is. That's where it's appropriate. And I think the blurring of the lines hopefully isn't in traditional newspapers. I don't see a lot of it.
Welcome to Season 4 of the official podcast of Crossing the Divide, a multimedia exploration of life in the Intermountain West. Crossing the Divide counters a media culture fixated on urbanism and elevates a region defined by open space, sweeping vistas, big skies, and natural wonder. I'm Gretchen Reist, guiding you over the divide and into the diverse terrain of the American West. Season 4 features The Daily Direct, spotlighting the important work of local journalism as an antidote to the troubling spread of online disinformation. This monthly feature, in addition to the existing Crossing the Divide podcast series, takes you behind the scenes at the Daily Sentinel, with exclusive access to the journalists and decision makers who deliver local headlines as they navigate the precarious shift to a digital news age. In this episode of Crossing the Divide, The Daily Direct, I speak with Dan West, The Daily Sentinel's newly minted editorial page editor, who has stepped into the role following the departure of Andy Smith. Dan and I discuss his journalistic beginnings working for his high school newspaper and trace the career path that led him out west and eventually to The Daily Sentinel. We dive into the important role of the newspaper's opinion page in a world where much of online and broadcast media fails to make a distinction. Dan West, welcome to Crossing the Divide, The Daily Direct.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Before we start, congratulations to you on your new position. You are now the editorial page editor here at The Daily Sentinel, and we'll get into the specifics of your role here in a little bit. But first, let's look at your background before you got here to The Sentinel. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, and thanks for congratulating me on the new job. So I went to school for journalism. I went to Boston University. And I worked for the student paper there. Actually, I started before then. I was the editor-in-chief of my high school newspaper.
So it
started, in, you know, as a student, not even a hobby, but just something to do after school when I wasn't playing sports. I started writing for the paper, and it became something I really enjoyed and decided to pursue it in college at Boston, which has an excellent journalism program. Once I graduated, I got a job as a general assignment reporter at a little weekly paper on an island called Block Island. It's about 12 miles off the coast of Rhode Island.
Nice.
Really beautiful New England, kind of Martha's Vineyard type feel. Smaller than Martha's Vineyard, but really interesting community, really interesting issues going on there that I got to cover. The first offshore wind farm in the country was being planned for that area at the time. So I covered a lot of that and just a lot of small town things that go on, boats washing up on shore and people talking about budgets, kind of similar to the stuff well, not boats washing up on shore, but
yeah, right.
And I was there for about 3 years and then moved on. I was the editor of another small weekly newspaper, this time in Maine, coastal Maine. The paper was called the Republican Journal. It actually predated the Republican Party. It was more of the general republic definition of that word. And I was the editor there for about 3 years. And that was kind of my first experience writing editorials. I wrote editorials for my paper, and I often wrote them for... it was kind of a group of weeklies, so a lot of times I'd be writing them for other papers as well. That's kind of what my role developed into there, which was a good experience to learn that side of it. I'd only done news reporting up to that point, so that was an exciting thing to learn. And I met my wife in Maine, and we dated and then decided to get married, and we decided we both liked Maine, but that we'd had enough of the cold weather. And we wanted to, I wanted to go somewhere where I could have a lot of great options for skiing. So we looked at kind of West Coast, Oregon, and Colorado, and we decided to move to Colorado. So we got married, quit our jobs the day before we got married, drove out to Colorado with no jobs, landed in Boulder. I got a job doing kind of PR fundraising for USA Rugby for a little while, and then was able to get a job as the editor of the Estes Park Trail Gazette. And I worked in Estes Park for that paper, also writing editorials. I started there writing sports, actually, and then just kind of freelance on the side. And then when that editor job opened up, I took it. And so I was there for about 3 years, and they have a lot of the same issues here that we write about, you know, public lands, typical Colorado stuff. It's a, you know, tourist area, so there's a lot of talk about tourism and businesses and that sort of thing. And then in 2018, my wife's parents live here, so we moved to be closer to them. And I started as a freelancer in the sports department at the Sentinel, kind of similar to what I did in Estes, where I just wanted to write. And Dale Schroll, the managing editor now, was sports editor then, and he gave me, you know, gave me a shot and some sports to write. So I covered sports for about 8 months or so as a freelancer. And then I was hired as a general assignment reporter here, and then moved on to be the city reporter in early 2019. Actually, late 2018. No, late 2019. where I covered the city of Grand Junction until last month when I became the editorial page editor.
Now, you mentioned that you had played sports in high school. What were your sports?
I played soccer and tennis. Yeah. And I swam for a short amount of time, but I didn't do that throughout high school.
Now, were you from Maine originally? Where?
No, I'm from New York originally.
Oh, okay.
Upstate New York, not the city. But yeah, so kind of equidistant between New York City and Boston.
Oh, wow. Well, that's perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you find it difficult moving out west, that everything is so far apart here when you're used to being so close to so many cities?
No, I think it's closer here. Like I lived outside Albany. So we were about 2.5 hours from Boston, about, depending on traffic, 2.5, 3 hours from New York City. So, you know, here we're 90 minutes to Moab, 2 hours to Telluride, less than 2 hours to Vail. Like, we're pretty close to a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It is funny. Sometimes you'll hear from people like that. Oh, everything's so far apart. And especially living in Maine, where you'd have to drive, you know, 4 hours to get to Boston, to a big city. I was kind of used to driving.
Yeah.
And I don't always think of things as that far apart out here. I actually think it's closer than you realize.
I guess it depends on what your priorities are. Like, you're probably a big outdoors person. So yeah, places like Moab or Telluride for skiing, yeah, they're really not that far. And that's what's great about the Western Slope, really.
Right, right. If you want to get to Denver, yeah, that's the trip.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't, usually.
Do you miss the seafood?
Yeah, that's the one thing we miss the most, is the ocean. We had a sailboat in Maine and would sail around the islands and things. And so I used to go clamming and we'd get mussels and stuff, and that fresh seafood is, yeah, definitely miss that, and definitely miss just being around the ocean.
Yeah.
But that's really the only downside.
Yeah.
And I keep saying they should just bring the ocean in. Yeah. We'll get a little ocean over in Utah and it'll be great.
Right. Well, maybe climate change will make that happen for us.
Yeah, that would be it. That wouldn't be good. But.
Or a massive earthquake that
just magically something happened and just get an ocean. But
now, you were doing the city beat, so I have to ask you this question. you always used to cover the city council.
Mm-hmm.
So what advice did you give your successor about how to cover city council in the Dennis Simpson era?
You know, Dennis gets a lot of flack, but he's usually has a point. He doesn't always go about it right.
Yeah.
But he's usually, there's something to it. I didn't really give any advice to Sam, who's the new city reporter, specifically about any individual city council member, but you know, you just kind of pass on good news gathering, you know, where to find information, who to talk to set up interviews, that sort of thing. It's pretty practical. And you kind of, each reporter will develop their style or relationship with any individual city council member, whether they're very helpful or very difficult. And Dennis could be both, to be honest.
Yeah.
'Cause he knows a lot of stuff, and he can point you in the right direction sometimes as a reporter.
Now, did you find that those meetings were lasting longer?
With the new council?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty natural for a new city council. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot of information. You want to, you know, make your voice heard. And I think as the council goes, they'll get into a rhythm and maybe dial it in a little more. You know, some city councils like long meetings. Some city councils like to be really efficient. And, you know, they'll develop that style over time. And right now it seems like there's also a lot of issues out there that they really need to talk about. So yeah. I think some of it's just naturally, you know, got a lot to get through.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is more of a desk job for you then, right? This isn't, you're not going to be moving around quite as much.
Yeah, not a lot of night meetings, which is a plus.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't get out in the community as much, which, you know, isn't, I always liked going out to some of that stuff where you get to see people and talk to them, and a little bit more sequestered away in my office now.
Yeah. So of all the beats that you've covered thus far in your career, did you have one that was a favorite, like sports, or did you like doing city stuff, or?
Yeah, I really like the city stuff. I'm really, I like, you know, talking about roads and, parks and all the stuff that the city does. If I could create a beat, I would love to do like an outdoor recreation beat. That would be my ideal. If you followed what I wrote about in my old job as a reporter, you might have guessed that, because I wrote a lot about trails and things like that whenever I got the chance. But the city offers that opportunity because the city is involved with a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so I think the city beat was my favorite. And I covered a little bit of everything here. I covered cops and courts. I covered school. You know, a little bit of business every once in a while. And as you know, with a smallish newspaper, people tend to get around to everything. But yeah, the city kind of aligned with my interests more than any of the others.
Let's talk about your new position as editorial page editor. What exactly does that entail?
Yeah, so the editorial page editor edits the editorial page. You know, when you write a letter to the editor, you're writing to me. So I curate the letters. I pick the ones that are going to go into print the next day. You edit them for style and grammar and all that, get them laid out on the page. Then we have columnists that we work with. So I'll be talking to our local columnists and, you know, getting their columns in the paper and edited. And, or, you know, I'll pick out a national column if we don't have a local column in particular for that day. And then, working with the editorial board, we develop the editorials. So, I'll usually talk with Jay Seaton, the publisher, in the morning, and he'll ask, you know, what's your plan? And I say, well, this was in the paper. What do we think? You know, here's an idea. Does that sound about, you know, what the Sentinel's position would be? And each week we meet with the editorial board and we talk about, you know, a range of ideas for that we think are going to be coming up within the next week. And then I sit down and I write it and send it out to the editorial board, and they offer their thoughts and I make edits, and then we get it on the page, and then the editorial page is done and I can go home for the day.
Now, you're working with a board. Is that something that you've done before? Have you seen that at other papers? Or
yeah, when I was in Estes Park, we had a pretty substantial editorial board. It had close to 10, I think, community members on it. It was a very large board. This one's a little smaller. It has some staff members and a couple community members. So it is something I've done before. And it's good. It, like, I always think that an editorial should have an editorial board directing, you know, the opinion of the paper. It shouldn't just be up to one person, and it's not here, which is, you know, you want to have perspective and you want to be able to develop an opinion that has been vetted by people who know the community and know and have a vision of where it wants to go.
Now, you started a column along with your Sunday editorial, correct? So is that every week?
I'm trying to do it every week. Didn't get in last week because I had some extra guest columns that I needed to get in there. So I think it's going to be mostly weekly unless I need to get an extra column in. but yeah, it's you can look for it on Sunday on the op-ed page. I've only done a couple so far, but yeah, when I was offered the role, Jay asked me to add something extra, and he left that kind of up to me what that could be. And a column made sense. I've written columns before, and I think that'll give readers a sense of who I am outside of the editorial, because the editorial really isn't my opinion. I might agree with it or disagree with it, but you know, my column will be my thoughts. And they won't touch on editorials or even topics that we are likely to editorialize on, because I don't want to blend those two.
Yeah.
But there are things that aren't necessarily appropriate for the editorial space that I can write about. Like, I wrote about speeding, which isn't, maybe we'd write an editorial about that, but you know, I had some recent personal experience in that, and also saw some news stories around here that made it local. And I thought, yeah, that's something I can write about.
Now, you mentioned a couple times also in your column that sometimes the position of the editorial board doesn't necessarily jive with your own opinion 100%. So I'm curious about that, because you said, you know, so I have to write, you know, I have to, you know, make an argument that I might not necessarily agree with. And that's kind of an interesting thing, because that seems to be a difficulty that we have in this society anymore, is being able to see an issue from another side and then be able to kind of argue that point. Did you have any kind of preparation for that? Were you in speech and debate or anything in high school that kind of prepared you to be able to do that?
Now that you mention it, I did do mock trial. So not exactly, but you know, it's something that lawyers do, where they'll have to argue for a client, you know, whether they personally agree with what was going on or not, you know. And so that, I guess, there a little bit, but I don't find it too difficult. I feel like I can usually see another point of view, especially with the editorial board, where we try to be measured and kind of a voice for the center within the community. And so usually the opinions are pretty reasonable, I think, even if I maybe don't, maybe I'm more to the extreme one way or the other, but I can see their point. Not that I hold a lot of extreme views. I don't want that to sound like that. But
no, I don't think it came off that way. Now, what exactly, talk about the voice of the Sentinel. So Jay, I do the newsletter every morning, and Jay had come on as Andy was leaving and kind of talked about that transition of you coming into the position. And he mentioned the voice of the Sentinel, that it's kind of its own entity. Can you kind of, I don't know, describe what that means or how you see that?
Sure. Well, I know Jay, you know, wanted, when he came on as publisher, he didn't want to stray too far from the history of the Sentinel. You know, this is a historic paper, and it's historically had an editorial, and that voice shouldn't vary wildly based on who's in my position or who the publisher is. It should be pretty consistent. So the paper's not contradicting itself. So when somebody from 100 years in the future goes back and reads our editorials, if they do, hopefully they will, there's a through line there. Mm. And I think, like I said, I think the voice that the Sentinel tries to strike is a pretty moderate one, while also advocating for positive change, or I guess what we see as positive change. And, part of that is guided by the editorial board. They're kind of a check on that. So if Jay or I have an idea that's too far out there, they might say, hold on, I don't know if that's right. And so, I think, like I said, kind of a voice for the center of the community, we don't want to be out there way on the far edge on either end saying, we need to be doing, advocating for some position that is going to turn off, I think, reasonable people. So, yeah.
What do you see as the purpose of the opinion section of a newspaper? It seems like journalism or media, let's say, has taken a turn maybe in the last decade or so where that line between fact and reporting facts and mixing it with opinion has become a little bit more blurred. So why is it important to have a specific section of the paper that is just devoted to that?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I really like newspapers as sources of news. It's clearly defined. You have your news section and you have your opinion page. And hopefully the news section doesn't have a lot of opinion or any opinion in it. And as journalists, we're trained not to. And I think that that's appropriate. You just the facts, report what's happening. And then on the opinion page, there's a need for opinion too. There are the facts, and then there are people's opinions about them. And that needs to be part of your consumption of a newspaper is, if we report that, just take a recent one. We report that bicycle collisions are, here's the numbers on how many bicycle collisions there are. And here's, comments from police and officials and whatever. Then that opens the space for, okay, well, what to do about that?
Yeah.
And that's not for the news reporter to say. That is for a columnist or an editorial or, a letter to the editor could very well have an opinion and say, we should get all cyclists off the road, which not my opinion, and I don't think is anybody's opinion, but that's one way you could reduce bicycle accidents. And if somebody had that and wanted to write a letter to the editor, that's adding to the conversation. So that's the point of the opinion section is ideally you consume the news, then you go and read our opinion, a columnist's opinion, and then you add your own opinion. And that's how a conversation within the community starts to find a solution to a problem or to just, call something out either for praise or for condemnation. And that's where the opinion page is. That's where it's appropriate. And I think the blurring of the lines hopefully isn't in traditional newspapers. I don't see a lot of it. Even if you might look at the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal and say, this one's more liberal, this one's more conservative, the reporting is mostly factual.
Yeah.
Their opinion pages skew one way or the other. And maybe some of their decisions on what to cover, the Wall Street Journal will cover more business and the New York Times might cover more social issues. But they're pretty factual. Where you see it more, I think, is online, in social media, in, cable news, where it's not as easily labeled. And that's my real issue. I don't have an issue with someone offering their opinion on social media or in a, you know, on a cable news broadcast. But the nice thing about a newspaper is it's right in there in the name. This is your opinion page, your commentary page. Whereas people might turn on a show and not realize that they're being offered an opinion. Or they might see a post on Facebook and not realize that it's not factual, it's opinion-based or whatever. And I wish that there was a little bit more of the newspaper model in that, where, you know, you're upfront about it, you're honest. This is my opinion, and that's fine.
Yeah. Have you ever found in your own news consumption with, you know, news media outside of the Sentinel, that maybe you read an article and kind of formed an opinion on something, but then went to the opinion page, read a column or an editorial, and it kind of changed your mind a little bit about how you felt?
I'm trying to think of a specific issue where that happened, but it definitely has. You know, my opinions aren't perfect. Nobody's are. And your first grasp of an issue isn't always the best. If you just read one article and said, well, clearly we need to do this, and then you hear something else and you think more about it, that's how you're supposed to go about it. I wish I could think of a specific example off the top of my head.
I'm sure there have been many, but...
Absolutely. That's a good thing. Again, that's the point of opinion pages, is to make you think.
So the Sentinel now is entering the era of Dan West as editorial page editor and editorial writer. What do you hope to bring to this role? What would you see for that person 100 years from now who is looking at a Sentinel from your time here? What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I think initially my hope is consistency. Andy did a really great job. Andy Smith, former editorial page editor, he did a really great job. He was a consistent voice on the editorial page that reflected what the editorial boards that he worked with felt and what the Sentinel felt. And I think initially I just hope that there's not much of a difference, that it more or less sounds like what the Sentinel would have, what their opinion would have been. Outside of that, I think my hope would be that I can bring different issues, maybe not different, but identify unique issues that we can editorialize about, rather than, and again, this isn't necessarily something that Andy didn't do, but I would like to do, is, a variety of issues, things that maybe people weren't thinking about. The voice should be the same as the Sentinels, but maybe the topics we cover can be, you know, varied and cover areas that haven't been talked about but maybe need to. And I also hope that there aren't any spelling or grammar errors in there.
It's easy to do. I can't proof my own work ever.
Yeah, thankfully I have other people who look at it. That's as right. Well. But yeah.
Well, is there anything else you would like to add before we say farewell?
Go easy on me, I guess. Send me your letters to the editor. I always need letters, and they're always, they're often enlightening. That's all I'd add, is stay engaged with the opinion page, and thanks for reading.
All right. Well, thank you for being here, Dan, and sharing your background and your history and your hopes for your role moving forward. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
That ends another edition of Crossing the Divide. Thanks for tuning in. As always, you can access our full lineup of conversations with Western Voices by searching Crossing the Divide on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and now on Amazon Music and Audible. Hit subscribe to stay plugged in to each new episode. Follow Crossing the Divide on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to keep up on podcast releases and access exclusive video and photography. To stay up to date on the day's headlines, visit gjsentinel.com and sign up for your Daily Dose newsletter. Crossing the Divide, a voice for the Intermountain West.